Well, thank you very much, and thank you for the kind invitation. I think just looking at Councillor Carter's presentation, I'm really glad I work in the space industry. When we decided to build our last generation of $1.5 billion worth of satellites, approximately 24 people got together over 18 months to decide on the spec that was needed. The 24 people then talked to the 12 people that were on the board about what should be happening, what the investment should be. The 12 people then talked to the non-execs. The non-execs then approved the expenditure, and then they went ahead and spent $1.5 billion. I take my hat off to everyone who has to work in an environment where you have to have so many stakeholders to talk with and align with. And I should also say I was a councillor at one stage, but on nothing like the scale that you're on. So my congratulations to you all. I don't envy the task. That was my pitch to get the audience on side. And if I may, I'd like to talk to you about CEDA, Inmarsat, and AlphaSat as an effective partnership. But first of all, it would be nothing if we didn't go to Arthur C. Clarke, that great Briton who posited in about 1948 that if you placed an object out at the equator at a proper distance, 36,000 kilometers, it would spin at the same speed as the Earth and therefore always appear to be in the same place. Quite handy, really, if you're looking to navigate or communicate, if the satellite is always where you think it should be, rather than spinning around in different places to be found. I'm going to talk to you of LEOs, MEOs, and GEOs. They're exciting, and there will be a test. But essentially what we're doing with satellite is we're creating resilient, terra-secure, and weather-resistant means by which to communicate. So often we talk about infrastructure, and we talk about building on the ground. And so often when either natural hazard or terrorist action or man-made mistake happens, we lose the ground-based infrastructure, and satellite remains one very good, strong way around that. We are able to offer at Inmarsat voice, visual, and data from wherever you are on the planet, of course, not including inside a building because we can't see the satellite. We've been proven in countless scenarios, aid, disaster, military, and so therefore I'd like us all to take our hat off to Arthur C. Clarke and the Clarke Belt and the Clarke Orbit, without which nothing would have been possible. Now, satellites are very modern. They've been around since 1957, coincidentally, like me. And they, I'm also very modern, were launched initially from Baikonur in Kazakhstan, causing massive shock in America and causing the eventual Apollo program to take place. But they were launched in 1957 with Sputnik, which weighed 83 kilograms, which sadly is not like me. I've added another 7 in the interim time. Sputnik lasted 22 days, and all it actually demonstrated was that you could launch something into Earth orbit, and it was considered in the time a rather terrifying prospect that the Soviets could put a bomb into space that could be dropped at any stage. Fortunately, that defense use of space hasn't been built upon, and communications became the key area. And in August 2008, Inmarsat lofted its latest of the three I-4 satellites, weighing in at 6 tons and the size of a London bus, and hopefully staying up there and keeping our investors happy for at least 15 years. They'd like 18, but then every accountant knows they always want to extend it a little bit further. And we are now working very, very hard on AlphaSat. And AlphaSat is, if you like, the big brother of the I-4s. No sooner have you finished a satellite program, 5 years in development, 5 years in build, and then the launch, then you already realize that your technology is 10 years old. And you have an advantage that it's 10 years old, but nobody else can get there any sooner. But at about 5 year crossover point, you start thinking, the technology is 15 years old, and we've got to do something more. So we're on a treadmill with technology, and you as customers and others as customers recognize that you want that treadmill speeded up, and you want better services all the time. And with the CEDA-backed AlphaSat program, we're seeking to build on the I-4 with Astrium and come out with the big brother in just 2012, 2013, depending on the actual launch window, that will be able to show us what the next generation of Inmarsat I-4s are. So it was a very, very critical partnership. So I said there'd be a test. LEOs, MEOs, and GEOs, I won't dwell on this. We presented this to a group of politicians last year, and there were a lot of blank faces. All you really need to know about satellites is that the way Inmarsat does it is the best. Well, I had to get that one in as well. LEOs are little satellites that are lobbed around the Earth like multiple circling buses. Occasionally, a LEO will drop out of the sky and everyone will assume that New York's going to get it, and they'll ring, I don't know, Demi Moore or someone to fly a satellite and go and rescue it. It doesn't quite happen like that. LEOs are a cost-effective sort of bridging gap, but like every bus service, occasionally one breaks down and you lose it and you've got to launch another one. The MEOs, for the sort of mid-Earth orbit satellites, they're used for GPS. Your car directions come from the MEOs, and they are a good and working opportunity, but you do need more of them to cover the Earth. And finally, the GEOs, which is us, the geostationaries, the Arthur Clarke posited concept. With just three satellites, we can cover the Earth with the exception of the poles, and we like to say that we leave it to the penguins and the polar bears to show us that they need for satellite communications, and if they do, we'll make the business case. There are also high Earth orbit satellites, but nobody really knows what they're for, and nobody really cares. I think they're mostly defense. So, the Inmarsat I-4s. These are, as was mentioned earlier, the most advanced commercial satellites ever launched. Naturally, of course, somebody else is building one, and we'll have that claim next year, and we'll have to say ours were the most advanced, but the next advance is, of course, AlphaSat. It was a $1.5 billion investment. Everything in space is done in dollars because of the historic links. That doesn't mean anything's getting any cheaper. It doesn't mean anything's getting any easier. And to Councillor Carter's observations about the banks, they are no better for a $1 billion company, which is only leveraged 2.2 times, and which has less than 900 million of debt, you can say that in a rocket business, and they are no more helpful at the moment than they are for small businesses. It reflects the scale of the challenge that we all have in business at the moment to face this reality. We support the latest generation of mobile broadband services, and I am going to show you a little DVD in a few moments' time, which will probably explain it a little bit better. Suffice to say that one I-4 satellite is 60 times more powerful than our last. And within that, our fleet's already cut down. The I-3s, there were five of them. The I-4s, there are three of them. With AlphaSat, what we get is an I-4 fourth satellite. Back in the days when Inmarsat was a UN charter agency, back in the 80s and 90s, they originally planned a five-satellite service. That wasn't possible for cost reasons, and AlphaSat has increasingly become clear was absolutely essential to Inmarsat's continued leadership of the world's mobile satellite communications. And again, all credit to Jim Braithwaite and the team who recognized that much faster than government and actually helped us to achieve the goal. We would not be here without him. Commercial life into the 2020s, 11 satellites in geostationary orbit at the moment with Inmarsat. For those that would like to know, there is a graveyard slot. When they get too old and too tired, we don't send them to Worthing. We put them into, and I'm in trouble now, I know how you feel that. I didn't mean that, and my mum would have told me off, but I do apologize. We send them to a graveyard slot, which is in between the Earth and the Sun. So there's no suggestion that any Inmarsat 6-ton satellite will ever come flying back to Earth. They're parked, and they're put out of harm's way. This is our coverage now that we have three satellites. As you can see, we can cover all the major land masses, and of course, the name gives it away, in Mar, as in Mare. Our original founding was to be the Global Maritime Distress Service for mariners. We are, in fact, the last port of call when your ship is going down. When you press that red button, you can expect via Inmarsat to be linked to the nearest Coast Guard and to the nearest ships and for rescue to be on its way. We're very, very proud of that process, and all of our forward planning with our satellites is to continue that Global Maritime Distress Service. It's our core value. Repositioning was done and completed at the beginning of this year. The Volvo Ocean Race used us for its communications. If you can imagine trying to get a high-definition television signal off of a 70-foot boat doing an average of 25 knots down the face of a wave, you'll know the scale of confidence that we have at Inmarsat that we do a job that many other people can't do. And the sailors got a lesson in what the world without Inmarsat would be when we moved the satellites coming out of China to get the optimum coverage over Australia, which meant they didn't have our service for 10 days. I have never seen so many plaintive, grumpy emails coming off of what are supposed to be grown-up men's racing boats in those 11 days. And they were very cross. As I say, we are the market leader. We are a FTSE company, 100 company. Some of that due, of course, to our natural skill and ability, but most of it due to the explosion of the markets last year and the number of people already in the FTSE who committed a sort of form of corporate plunge. They may well be back. We like to think of ourselves really as a billion-dollar company that has grown since privatization and has grown quite effectively. We are, we think, a very reliable and versatile operation. We offer effectively broadband from Mobile Planet. It's not broadband as you know in your home, but half a megabit in the middle of Afghanistan right now, or in Iraq, or in the middle of the ocean, is a considerable advance on anything else that anyone can do. And suffice to say that the AlphaSat is part of that critical infrastructure. One of the things that comes with AlphaSat is spectrum. And spectrum is effectively the oxygen of the new world that we all live in the digital age. If you don't have oxygen, you're going to be out of business. And that was very critical in the approach to trying to win AlphaSat. And that really is the element I'd like to talk a little bit about today, the big difference that was made by CEDA and by regional development agencies in the approach to the European Space Agency's AlphaSat project. AlphaSat, I refer to it as that because their working title is Alpha Bus, and I have the idea that everyone thinks it's red and it has two floors. The bus is the jargon for the main box, the flight unit of the satellite. Our payload is AlphaSat, so what we're going to do with it gets bolted onto the payload. This is a joint project between Astrium and Thales, driven by the European Space Agency in recognition that the Europe did not have a large-scale communication satellite for the commercial market. Only America had them, and Europe felt there was a strategic need to be able to compete, and so ESA worked their way through it. The prize was a half-price satellite. The prize was come up with the best payload, the best package, the best program, oh, and come up with another group of things, which included government support, and you will be awarded a satellite that you can then add to your network. I have to say that we ran into numerous civil service walls on this. They were determined that we weren't going to get it. They were determined that they were sponsoring Galileo and nothing else. And in turn, they were determined they were spending no money on Galileo because that would come out of the transport budget, and that wasn't going to happen. As the program went on over 15 to 18 months, it was absolutely clear that it was a requirement of the European Space Agency that some government money and a letter of support came in. And it was in no small way due to CEDA sitting down and saying, we're interested in this, we think this is a good project, and EDA being persuaded that they would also join in with us, that we managed to get over the finish line. And if I tell you that the finish line was actually achieved at 5 o'clock on the Friday before the bid had to go in on the Saturday, by the Saturday, Friday evening, then you will know just how close it was to the UK not getting this. It would have gone to Eutelsat of France, and everyone would have ticked the boxes that the European Space Agency obviously wasn't interested in Britain, and Britain obviously isn't interested in the European Space Agency. As we've seen now with Harwell and the developments that are going on there now, our signal via CEDA and EDA was read correctly by ESA as Britain is serious about space. Very, very critical, more than we knew at the time. We got L-band spectrum, additional spectrum, the oxygen of the business, and we got that critically over Middle East, Africa, and Europe. Suffice to say, at the moment, the European Union is now looking at a single skies policy for air traffic control, and they're now looking at AlphaSat, if they weren't already, as the vehicle by which they might deliver a single air traffic control for the whole of Europe. As this project has developed, as we've got closer to the reality of it, we've begun to see just how important it was for Britain to win it. And so often in the business world, you look at RDAs and you think, yeah, well, what do? And the answer is provide the building blocks where market would not be in place. It's essential that we retain it. And I say that as an absolute rabid dyed-in-the-wool Tory, and I have voiced this with Francis Maude and everybody else. You have my personal complete support. The launch of the AlphaSat is destined late 2012, maybe 2013. I say that because the rocket is booked, we're ready to go. We had another example of European Space Agency efforts in that we booked an American rocket because the Europeans couldn't come up with the right price. And after we booked the American rocket, the Europeans decided that they could come up with the right price. So everything is flexible in the space industry. This is AlphaSat. It'll be one of the most advanced ever built. Astrium are doing a phenomenal job with it. It's proceeding well on course, on target. As you see, the center of the beam is in the middle of Africa. So we will be able to make major infrastructural advances for Africa as well off of the back of this program. And again, the EU has come to us and said, oh, we've been thinking about satellite-delivered health programs for Africa. Do you think you could help us with that? Here it is. This is where the money's gone. It's gone in the building of a satellite. This is live pictures, the service module structure, as our engineers like to say. I like to say the main bit of the satellite. And with the main bit of the satellite comes the xenon propulsion system, which is otherwise known as the petrol tank. And here, just for size, you can see the two scientists here on the satellite. She's on her side at the moment, waiting the digital payload that's been developed with CEDA, EDA, and LDA money at Astrium in Stevenage, which will be the most advanced digital processor in the world at the time of launch, which sets the bar for the Americans, the Chinese, the Russians, and gives Britain a leadership that it wouldn't otherwise have had if it hadn't had this project. We will, with the AlphaSat, be able to have much greater power and stronger signals between smaller handsets, which means they'll have to be built and designed somewhere, hopefully in the UK. We'll have a handheld voice capability, and we'll have mobile broadcast capabilities. This will be leading to substantial revenue generation, which in turn will lead to, unfortunately, higher taxes that Inmarsat will have to pay back to government. In short, the figures really speak for themselves. This was 50 million euros invested in world-class spectrum. Why did Inmarsat need the 50 million? Well, we didn't. But we couldn't apply for the project without public funds. Having done so, the generation has now meant that people will have to come to Astrium in the UK to buy a satellite of such advanced capability. Other ESA countries had put in 60 million of their own in the hope of winning AlphaSat, so it was a bit of a surprise to France and to an extent Luxembourg that it came to Britain instead, but I mustn't gloat. We in our turn are playing our part. We're putting 310 million euros into the program, so this is not a free ride by any stretch of the imagination for Inmarsat. And of course it's converting into a major investment in Portsmouth and Stevenage, guaranteeing over 500 jobs. And there's very, very strong potential, and I don't want to frighten anyone from the City of London, in that Inmarsat may well want to buy another one of these satellites, which would be a total multiplier effect for the 50 million of 1.5 billion euro program out of AlphaSat. This was, in short, a major win from Europe for the UK. So without CEDA, there would be no AlphaSat in Britain, because no government funding was available, and we had no support from the ministries. It would have gone to Eutelsat of France, and we were saved, both as a country and as a business, by timely intervention from regional development agencies, and indeed by CEDA's leadership, which helped us to win the AlphaSat program. So on behalf of all of Inmarsat, may I thank Jim and applaud his chairmanship, and thank CEDA and indeed EDA for the hard work and support they gave us. Thank you all very much.